They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they scored!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
He doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks. No player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien pulls it in!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Nicolas Roy.
He's 2 for 4 this year in the Quebec League. Roy works in, deep, Parsons makes the stop, and the United States has won the gold medal in Montreal. World Junior Champions with the win of the shootout.
Better late than never. Good evening, Winnipeg. Welcome to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Joel Marcoux with you in studio. A late night start to the program after that riveting gold medal game between Canada and the U.S. and the World Juniors. Get rid of the shootout. Every now and then, it's sort of a nice reminder in international hockey about just how lousy the shootout is.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens in soccer, but I don't care about soccer, for the most part. It doesn't really bother
Probably
me.
Probably fixed anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So you look at hockey, and, the last real big shootout, I mean, the nothing is ever going to top the 98 Nagano one.
He's got a score.
No.
No.
The Taves shootout, what year was that?
2006.
The Taves...
07, technically. 06, 07.
Right. 06.
And that was a semifinal, though.
That's right. That was a semifinal against the U.S. And then tonight, that's the shootout here in the gold medal game. A really entertaining hockey game. I'm shocked the way the third period went, the way the second and third period went, that it didn't end in overtime.
Yeah.
Goalies couldn't stop a beach ball. The play, going back and forth. I was surprised they played the whole 20 minutes of overtime to get it to the shootout.
Guys, you have to give so much credit to Carter Hart of Canada and Tyler Parsons of the USA for the way they played in overtime, because goals were going in left and right in that third period.
Yeah.
And they both stood on their heads there in overtime, made a bunch of really good saves, and they just couldn't beat Tyler Parsons in the shootout. So give USA a lot of credit. I mean, it looked like Canada had that one in the bag when they went up 4-2 there on Matthew Joseph's beautiful goal there. But, give the USA credit. They had a very talented team. They stuck with it. Just go to double overtime, Drew.
Oh, I could have watched another 4 periods of that kind of fire wagon hockey.
Just keep the overtime going. Like, there doesn't need to be a shootout. Again, I'll say it again. There's nothing more exciting than double OT or triple OT in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Sure.
So, I mean, Mike Modano just tweeted it out about 20 minutes ago. I mean, it's a good way to ruin a hockey game.
Yeah, it's no surprise. I mean, the double IHF's never going to change. They think they refuse to listen to hockey fans. They think that they know better. They think that everything revolves around them, not the fan base that they're trying to appeal to.
Yeah.
So it's no surprise that they're going to continue with this, the charade of deciding a game based, using the shootout.
And fortunately, just quick memory here, I can't recall the last time a gold medal game in this tournament was decided in the shootout. I remember Matt Halaschuk, of course, in 08, they're part of BC, got the OT winner. But an actual shootout in this game, can you guys recall right now?
For the gold medal, no, I can't.
The
Taves one is jumps to mind, of course. Was the semis. Halaschuk, you mentioned, won in overtime. He had the golden goal, quote unquote.
And same thing in Ottawa with the Eberle last second goal.
Yeah,
that was a semifinal against Russia, and I think that went to a shootout. And then they waxed Sweden, I think, in the gold medal game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right now, in gold medal games, Canada, U.S., I think U.S. now leads it 3-1.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's the famous Marc-Andre Fleury game.
Yep.
What year was that?
That was back in 2003? 2004 tournament.
Okay,
Patrick O'Sullivan, Coburn, remember that?
They run into each other, and then bank shot off that Fleury tries to clear the zone. Canada had a big lead in that game, of course, and then the Americans stormed back just like they did tonight.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, Canada can't seem to close out games in the World Juniors. I don't know if that's a function of youth, if that's a function of, the amount of talent the Americans, per se, had on their roster tonight. But, if you're up by 2 goals, 2 separate times in a gold medal game, you expect to be able to close it out. But the most impressive part to me wasn't so much that the U.S. came back. which was impressive. It's how quickly they came back.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when Canada made it 4-2.
Bang, bang.
Bang, bang. U.S. Yeah. You blinked and the U.S. had tied the game.
But the Americans, guys, I mean, they were a favorite going into this tournament. I mean, the odds-on favorites were the U.S. and the Swedes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could throw Canada in there as
sure.
well. It wasn't like there was one country that was favored tremendously, but it was the Canadians, the Americans, and the Swedes. And, I mean, it was still a successful tournament for Team Canada. Coming off of that sixth-place finish in Helsinki, they still get the silver medal. I mean, in Canada, we never, you know, want to come home with anything but a gold medal.
Okay.
But it was, I mean, it came down to a shootout, Drew, and I really liked the way Canada responded after losing to the U.S. on New Year's Eve. So they were very good against Sweden, as we talked about before. Going into that game, Sweden hadn't lost yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, give Canada a lot of credit here. And sure, I mean, they blew the lead, but this is a team that it's not like they've had a drought like the Swedes. Canada won
Canada
2 years
would win
ago.
This tournament every single year if they had their full roster of eligible players.
Yeah.
And the only reason this tournament is competitive is because they don't have that full roster. Because
sure.
they don't have, I mean, Connor McDavid's still eligible for this team.
Well, and the Americans can say that about Austin Matthews.
Yeah,
right?
So the Americans have a few
Matthew
other players
Kachuk.
Too. Yeah, the Americans have some players too. But I mean, if this was truly a best on best, which it's not, Canada would win it each and every year.
But you're right. I mean, the U.S. were the favorite, but at the same time, you're up 4-2.
Yeah.
That's the problem, right? You're up 4-2 in a game, and now, you know, you want to go back and talk about droughts. Remember, they had the big referendum after their big drought, after winning it in 97, then they went to Grand Forks and started off their drive for 5 in a row at that point. But since 2009, after that streak ended, they only have one, which was a couple of years ago when it was in
yep.
Toronto, Montreal.
Yeah.
I mean, you mix in a couple of bronze, a couple of silvers, a couple of, you know. Well,
truthfully, I think
finishes.
It keeps it entertaining.
Well,
yeah. If Canada won each and every season, and every year, there would be no drama.
And Joel, you make a good point. I mean, gone are the days of, you know, 10 or 15 years ago when Canada was going to win 2, 3, 4 gold medals in a row, 5 gold medals in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, the competition is too fierce. And you look at a team like Switzerland, for example. Nobody really expected that out of them. I mean, they didn't win a medal here, but they were certainly the surprise of the tournament.
Yeah.
Finland gets knocked out the year after winning. So,
yeah.
I mean, you could make the argument that, you know, hockey's never been more competitive at the international level.
And consider this. When they won their 5 in a row, which started at Grand Forks there in 04, 05.
That is the best. That's the best team ever.
You know,
assembled.
Thanks in large part, well, thanks to the lockout, really,
yeah.
because half that team would have been in the NHL otherwise. But look at that. They won 5 in a row. So they waxed the opposition in Grand Forks, then they waxed the opposition in Vancouver. But then the year after that, 07, it's the Carey Price, Jonathan Toews shootout show. The next year after that, they win in overtime. And then the year after that, they win just barely when Eberle ties the game, the semifinal with like 1 second. So that's 5 gold medals in a row, 3 of which almost didn't happen, right? And then so now the bounces are not going their way. And that's the beautiful part of this winner-take-all in one game is that, you know, Canada's not winning all the time, and it makes it entertaining.
Hey, you know, full marks on the victory to Team USA. Great for Winnipeg Jets prospects Jack Roslovic,
yeah.
who, of course, will return to the Manitoba Moose, was just named as an AHL All-Star. Eric Foley will go back to Providence College, continue his NCAA career. So, I mean, if you're looking for a silver lining, if you're disappointed that Team Canada loses, is that the Winnipeg Jets, presumably you support them.
Yeah.
A couple of their players are wearing gold around their neck. Tonight.
Yeah.
And the two NHL teams that probably are the happiest with the way this gold medal game played out are Pierre Dorion and Steve Yzerman.
Yeah, because the Team Canada and Team U, you know, was just littered with players from the Tampa Bay Lightning and from the Ottawa Senators.
I would argue Colin White was the best player in the tournament for Team USA, and Thomas Chabot was the best player in the tournament for Team Canada.
Yeah.
Entertaining hockey for sure.
Yeah.
It was entertaining. Jets have been playing some entertaining hockey. Let's go to break. We'll talk about the 2-game sweep in Florida. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
So Ehlers will get a penalty shot. The left-handed shot will pick it up all the way back in his own zone to his own line. Picks it up at center ice. Swings to the near side. Vasilevsky way out. Goes to the backhand. Forehand shoots and scores!
Truba carries down the left side. 3 wide for the Winnipeg Jets. Truba rink wide trying to find line. And that got steered away. Little steals in the line. He scores! Patrick Laine, but a steal by Brian Little. 21 on the year for Laine, and the Jets have a 2-0 lead.
Music to the ears of Winnipeg Jets fans. Goals by Nikolaj Ehlers. Goals by Patrick Laine. And the Jets leave Florida with two victories in back-to-back games. 6-4 in Tampa on Tuesday and 4-1 in Sunrise on Wednesday. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information about the Linden Market Dental Center, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So, gents, they went into Florida after two stinkers of games at home. That the game against the Columbus Blue Jackets and then that debacle against the New York Islanders.
Yeah.
And they take care of business. You get two regulation wins against a Tampa Bay Lightning team that, sure, they have been struggling, but still a very good hockey team. Still a hockey team that I expect is going to make it in the Eastern Conference playoffs still potentially go on a run in the Eastern Conference.
Sure.
And then you have the victory the next night on the back-to-back with Connor Hellebuck going second straight start against the Florida Panthers. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that's the Winnipeg Jets in a nutshell.
Yeah, and they were really two impressive performances by the Jets. I was actually more impressed by last night's performance by the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning by a score of 6-4, and I don't really think that that score was indicative of that game, because I thought that the Jets probably could have had 8 or 9 goals in that game, and I thought that Tampa Bay was lucky to keep it that close. Obviously, you have the empty netter by Patrick Laine in there, but the game last night versus the Florida Panthers. I mean, you look at that Florida Panthers team, and that effort was pathetic. And I realize that this team has some injuries right now. Their top two players, Alexander Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau, were not in the lineup. Mm-hmm. But the Florida Panthers did not put up much of a fight. But hey, guys, give the Jets credit. I mean, they played a very smart road game. I thought they just kept it very simple, took a lot of time and space away from the Panthers. And, I mean, you can't not talk about how good the Scheifele-Laine-Ehlers line was. 12 points in two games. Patrick Laine scores 2 goals and 5 points in those two games. I mean, that line was just sensational, the way they were skating and moving the puck. And you mentioned Connor Hellebuck, Drew. I mean, we don't see goalies play back-to-back games very often, but give Hellebuck a lot of credit, because he was absolutely awful on New Year's Eve against the Islanders. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't deny that he was terrible. And Michael Hutchinson had to come into the game, and he let in a couple of goals as well. But I give full marks to Connor Hellebuck, because he's had his ups and downs, Drew, this season, mm-hmm. just like the rest of the Jets team. But I thought he was really sharp yesterday against the Panthers. He didn't have to steal the game, but he was really good. And even though he let in 4 goals against the Lightning, I thought he was really good as well. So, I mean, the top line was excellent, and the goaltending was great. And I think that's exactly what the Jets needed.
Well, first of all, I agree with that. But also, that Lowry-Armia line with Matthias, I mean, that is an added bonus to this team, because most teams will have two top lines. So you can match up your two top lines. If your third line can then go out there and generate some offense while not, you know, relinquishing their defensive responsibilities, that's a bonus. And even though they weren't necessarily putting the puck in the net as often as the Ehlers-Scheifele line.
Yeah. Matthias, of course, opening the scoring last night, though.
3-5 now, right, since returning. They were generating some serious offense and moving the puck. And speed was the name of the game. I mean, that Tampa Bay Lightning game, they were fast. They were winning puck battles. They were creating turnovers with their speed, which would then in turn create offensive opportunities for them, and they were capitalizing on those chances. So, I don't know, maybe now that they're fully healthy, 4-2 since having those bodies back, you know, it's a fresh start for these guys. And they've managed to survive the first half. And by survive, I mean, you know, 19-19-3 through 41. If they can mix in a 7 out of 10, maybe 6-3-1 in the next 20 games, they're still in it. But it's going to take a couple of improvements in the special teams categories. But right now that they have their full complement of players, the way they had it at the beginning of the season, it's a miracle that they're not way out of it right now.
You mentioned the Matthias, Lowry, and Armia line, Joel, and I thought the most impressive shift they had didn't result in a goal for the Jets. It was right after the Panthers had scored. Greg McKegg had scored to make it 2-1, and the Jets were a little bit on their heels. It was sort of the only time in the course of the game that the Panthers felt as if they had some energy with them. Mm-hmm. And then the Lowry, Matthias, and Armia line hit the ice, and the Jets had really been, you know, pinned into their own zone. and those guys were able to really flip the entire ice surface with a really good shift in the offensive zone. Didn't result in anything, but the Panthers were on their heels at that, as a result of that shift, and you sort of felt from then on the Jets were able to take control of the game. It wasn't that much longer after that they were able to regain the two-goal lead.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a sort of an unsung TSN turning point, just the way that line was able to go there and stifle the momentum that the Panthers had started to create.
Yeah, and Drew, Joel mentioned that since returning from injury, Sean Matthias has three goals, and he's got three goals in his last four games. But you look at that line, and they've got the size, they've got the speed. They don't have necessarily a 30-goal scorer on that line, but Sean Matthias is a guy who scored 18 goals in this league before, and I think Adam Lowry has the ability to score. I mean, he's not a guy that you're expecting to score 25 or 30 goals, but he can certainly be a 15 or 20-goal scorer. And Joel Armia gives you that kind of that tenacity, and he's also got the speed, and he's, I think, got some untapped offensive potential as well. So I agree with you.
He's a great penalty killer, too.
He's a great penalty killer, Joel, and I think that line
when
has...
he's not sitting in the box. He's taken a couple penalties last two games.
Yeah. And this, guys, is something the Jets have not had in spurts this season. Pardon me, they have only had in spurts this season. They haven't been able to put together a three-game winning streak yet, so they have their chance Saturday afternoon in Buffalo. But certainly those two games in Florida, the Jets are playing very well on the road right now. I mean, it's at home now where they're struggling, as opposed to earlier in the season they were struggling on the road. So, I mean, you know, the Jets have a great opportunity here to put a win streak together. We've seen what it's done for some other teams around the NHL. I mean, look at Columbus, right? Mm-hmm, they're the best example. So the Jets have to keep it going this weekend.
More on the Jets coming up in the second hour of the program. Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly past the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment, of course, brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
It's no coincidence that our next guest is sponsored by Bernstein's Deli. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from Yahoo Sports, Josh Cooper. Joshua, how are you?
I'm craving the Illegal Curve sandwich right now.
An excellent answer.
Late-night snackage. is in order in my place. Much like the late night snackage at The Bachelor first episode the other night, I was told we're going to talk about this.
Well, just so I understand, first of all, I'm a little insulted that I didn't get the invite, but so I understand you invited Ezzy into a Bachelor fantasy league, is that correct?
I need your email address. And Ezzy was just texting me. Not to downplay it at all, but this isn't exactly a closed fantasy league. But we'll take care of this after the broadcast.
Well, okay. Josh, the thing is, you sent me the invite yesterday, and I've been trying for the last day to get in there. But for some reason, I don't know if it's because I'm in Canada or what it is, but I tried to join, and I was actually watching the first 20 minutes of the first episode today in preparation for the interview. I just couldn't get through a full episode, but I can tell you this much. I can't wait to find out who Nick picks.
I don't know.
Maybe the computer knows you're not in it for the right reasons.
Who's Nick?
Okay, by the way, Josh, like I haven't watched The Bachelor since like the first couple of seasons.
Why did you watch the first couple of seasons?
I mean, it was a hot show back in the day. But the thing that I don't understand, Josh, is Nick's already been on The Bachelor twice before, and he was denied an engagement.
Well, so and before we get into hockey, because I know that no one's listening to hear my thoughts on this amazing show, but essentially, this pick is a gift to all mega fans of The Bachelor, because we've seen him essentially get dumped on national TV twice, and then dump someone this past summer. So
that was on Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah, and Bachelor in Paradise is the spinoff show of The Bachelor.
So he's done more research in preparing to speak about The Bachelor with you than he's done on 7 years of this show otherwise. You're aware of that.
Well, here's the thing, though, and this is what I always tell people in hockey who make fun of me for watching this show, because, I mean, you guys aren't the first. There are a lot of people. When you watch a lot of hockey just all the time, like as we do in our line of work, you really just need a break sometimes. And to me, there's nothing just more ridiculous than this television show to provide that sort of non-sports type moment in my day or 2 hours of my week when I'm not laser focused on the U.S. beating Canada in a shootout. It's just one of those things I have to do.
I suppose we all need our mental releases, and I guess for you and Ezzy now, that's The Bachelor. Just as an aside, Josh, you're aware that Ezzy's no longer a bachelor, right?
I did not know that.
He is now he's an engaged individual, yep. Soon to be married.
Yeah.
Ah, mazel tov.
Are you coming to the wedding? They're serving Illegal Curve sandwiches at the wedding.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh.
I need an invite.
Well, you'll get the invite. That's no problem.
Got to save the day.
Hold on. Does that mean that I can't be in the pool now that I'm not a bachelor? Was I invited into the pool because you thought I was a bachelor?
No. I just thought you'd be cool. join the pool.
No. I'm going to get into this, Josh. I really need to see who Nick is going to pick, because in previous seasons, he was actually a finalist for 2 years on The Bachelorette, Drew. His name is Nick Vile. He's a software salesman from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Please make this stop.
Oh, dear.
Okay, Josh, let's talk about the World Junior game, because honest to God, they're going to pull the plug on this show. They should have done it a long time ago, but they're going to finally do it.
No, never.
What do you think of that World Junior game, aside from the obvious? I mean, as an American, I'm sure you're quite happy, and we're happy for you. But, I mean, is there anything worse than a shootout?
Well, you know, despite my trolling about the U.S. being the World Juniors, you guys, my Canadian friends, really, I'm pretty ambivalent on the results. I lived in Canada for a year and I loved it, and I'm from the United States, so I have to love it despite what happened in early November. But that aside, I don't love this whole thing going to a shootout. I never have. And now, granted, I mean, I know international rules are different from NHL rules, and that just in part has to do with the fact that sometimes international hockey just kind of has its own way of doing things. I mean, the other night I spent about an hour researching what relegation actually meant in the relegation segment of the World Juniors, just before I had a firm grasp on it enough to write about Finland being relegated. But I don't love the shootout. I just never have. I don't even love it in NHL games, to be quite honest. And I just don't. If I'm a Canadian and I lose this tournament on a shootout, as Team Canada did, I would rightfully be upset. Now, granted, rules are rules, and you have to deal with the rules as they're kind of laid out. But I just wouldn't be very happy about it, just because that, to me, isn't really a fair way to lose. And in some regards, not even a fair way to win. So both teams played super well. In a lot of respects, they both deserve to win the game. But at the end of the day, I think that you play until, especially in a championship game, you play until there's a winner. You don't play until the end of this skills contest. And that's just kind of what we saw played out tonight.
I agree with you, Josh, and I bet Nick Vile doesn't like the shootout either. I want to move to Shea Weber's return to Nashville as a member of the Montreal Canadiens. He used to cover the Predators for the Tennessean newspaper. That game took place a couple of nights ago. What was it like for you to watch Shea Weber return to the city of Nashville in a Montreal Canadiens uniform?
Well, I'm not going to lie, guys, and I'm going to come out with this right now. I actually got a little misty during the whole video, because I mean, to me, as someone who covered Shea Weber, I mean, I covered him. I think he was 24 when I first started covering him, and I think I was 27, I want to say. And, I mean, I kind of grew up as a beat reporter covering him, and I saw him kind of, not to get emotional here, but I saw him kind of grow up from sort of this young guy to now a guy who is basically a leader, if not one of the biggest voices in an original six dressing room, and just kind of all grown up and coming back to Nashville and seeing the support that he received was really touching to me, because one of the things about Shea Weber is he's very, very charitable with his time. We just never see it because he's always basically like, don't put the cameras on me when I'm doing this stuff. I don't want all the attention on me. And when they in that video show the cancer survivor and then his best buddy saying, Shay, you're my best friend in the whole world, I was watching this and I'm like, wow, either A, this guy was super charitable, which I know he was, and just nobody really saw it and knew about it, or B, they're just trying to get the guy to cry. They're just trying their best. And I think it was a little bit of both to some respects, but he did a lot in that community, and I think that the Preds recognized it. And to me, it was kind of emotional just because I just feel like he had never, not that he'd never gotten his due, but he just never advertised it. And to see the team go all out to finally be like, this is the kind of person this guy is, this is what he meant to our community, to me, I thought was really special, and it was really cool to see.
Josh, Blue Jackets, that streak came to an end tonight. Record-breaking is a no-go. Assuming the team doesn't immediately go on another heater and they come back down to earth, what is this team? What do we make of them right now, entering the back half of the season?
They're an excellent hockey club. They are a really, really good hockey team. And even though they may have lost to the Washington Capitals, I mean, look, it was going to happen at some point.
For sure.
And they have so much speed in that lineup, up and down that lineup. They're very well coached, which I know sounds weird to a lot of people considering the fact that there's this strange dislike and disdain of John Tortorella, which, to be perfectly honest, I've never quite understood. I mean, I get the fact that he can be a bit of a lightning rod with some stuff. I mean, going into the Calgary Flames locker room to try to pick a fight was kind of ridiculous. But beyond that, I mean, he's, at least for me, from a media perspective, he gives me what I want, gives me what I need as far as trying to get quotes from him, and he's been nothing but solid. And he's won everywhere he's gone. And they have a tremendous defense. Werenski is an excellent young defenseman. Seth Jones looks at least two steps quicker and way more mature this year. And they have arguably the best goaltender in the NHL right now, with all due respect to Carey Price and Devan Dubnyk. I think for my money, if I'm going for one game winner take all, I want Sergei Bobrovsky in net right now. So I think that they are the most balanced, best hockey team in the NHL right now.
Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports is our guest on NHL This Week. Josh, sort of piggybacking on that, on Joel's question about the Blue Jackets, what's most impressive to you? That they won 16 games in a row, or the fact that despite winning 16 games in a row, they're only 3 points ahead of the Pittsburgh Penguins?
But here's the thing, and this just goes to, it's interesting you bring that up too, because I've been harping on this. I looked at the points totals that they showed on the Columbus broadcast tonight after the game. And I mean, this is just the parody in the NHL. It's unreal with how this works, where you can go on a 16 game winning streak, second best in the history of the league, and still the only 3 points ahead of the second place team. I mean, I just remember last year, Montreal started the year 9-0-0, and then obviously they fell off pretty quickly, but that's not really a great example to use to think of it, but that's just the parity around the league right now. You can go on an epic winning streak, but other teams still figure out ways to get points and keep pace with you. So yeah, even though to me the Columbus Blue Jackets are the best team in the league, not just by the winning streak, but how they beat a lot of these teams, still they're not super far ahead of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I mean, it's going to be a dogfight in the Metropolitan Division all the way to the final. But also too, I think Pittsburgh has played some more games than them, but still I agree with you in that sense that it is kind of crazy that they're not that far ahead of them.
Yeah, just one game. The Blue Jackets have one game in hand on the Penguins. They have four games in hand on the Rangers, who also sit 3 points back with 55 points.
Josh, you know, moving along to the teams in Florida, the Winnipeg Jets just went into Miami and they just went into Tampa Bay and beat both teams. And then tonight, an hour ago, the Tampa Bay Lightning were smoked by the Nashville Predators 6-1. Those two teams right now sitting in 10th and 12th in the Eastern Conference, the Lightning 10th, and then the Florida Panthers sitting in 12th in the Eastern Conference. Out of those two teams, which team do you see turning this around and getting into the Eastern Conference playoffs?
Oh, definitely the Lightning. I still think they're going to do it. It may take some, but I think that they're going to eventually make the playoffs. But there really has to be some concern now. And the way they've been playing of late, as you mentioned, just losing to the Jets, getting beat badly by them, and getting just demolished by the Predators tonight. I think Colton Sissons had a hat trick in that game. There has to be a lot of alarm bells going off with that team. Now, yes, they haven't played with Steven Stamkos for a majority of the season, but they also didn't during the playoffs last year and ended up coming essentially within one game of making another Stanley Cup final. There is an incredible amount of talent on this team, and to me, there's absolutely no excuse in regards to where they are. So I think that they will pull it all together. I like their coaching staff. I like their goaltending. I like their management, and I like the talent they have. But, I mean, the longer it goes, the more I wonder, is it going to happen? And I'm sure that a lot of Lightning fans are wondering that too.
Aside from the Blue Jackets streak, of course, what sticks out to you when looking at the league at the halfway point right now?
There's a lot of things that stick out to me. I mean, the fact that Edmonton's still in it, the fact that your beloved Winnipeg Jets can look like the most exciting team in hockey some nights and other nights just have absolute stinkers. Devin Dubnyk, his play and goal has been tremendous. Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins turning back the clock to the 1980s to sort of the big offensive game with lack of defense. And the Columbus Blue Jackets, to me, really have been the story all year. And John Tortorella has been the story with them. They've been, to me, my favorite story. And when I think of the 2016-17 season, I think of them and how just miserable they were at this point last year and the unbelievable turnaround this year to where they could probably give some other teams hope that, hey, if we buy into what our coach is selling, this can happen. And to me, that is still, no matter what, the biggest takeaway. But I think that this year, I really like the storylines around the league. They've been pretty good. There's nothing that stood out to me that's been kind of been a dark cloud over anything. And I think it's been overall a very solid year through the midway point.
Well, if there's hope for the Columbus Blue Jackets to become the NHL's best, I guess there's hope for Nick the Bachelor to finally find love this year. Yeah. That's his name? His name was Nick?
Yeah, Nick okay. Vile. Episode 3, Drew, is on Monday.
Okay, there you go. Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports. Josh, always appreciate it. Hockey, Bachelor, Deli, whatever it can be, we always appreciate you having you on.
And just so you know, I always go on your show for the right reasons.
That's why we love you, sir.
That's a Bachelor thing. You have to watch to understand.
Yes, I assumed it's because they're in love for the right reasons or some nonsense like that.
On the show for the right reasons, to which, let's face it, nobody goes on that show for the right reasons.
Well, I guess it's a step up from actually prostituting themselves on the street. So there's something to be said for that.
Zing!
Bye, Josh. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Josh.
Bye.
It's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
You know, that's a big opportunity for me, and I think this is a new chapter, new page for me. And started 2017 with the fresh start. I'm really excited.
That is former 8th overall draft pick of the Atlanta Thrashers, a gentleman by the name of Alex Burmistrov, who saw his time as a member of the Winnipeg Jets come to an end last week as he was placed on waivers by the Jets after being a healthy scratch for the majority of the season. I think you can say it's the majority of the year. Maybe not quite, but
it was at least 10-plus games.
Yeah, consecutively. It's been a number of games. It
invisible was either way.
Yeah. Placed on waivers by the Winnipeg Jets and claimed by the Arizona Coyotes, a team obviously desperate to find talent wherever they may be able to do so. You know, it's on one hand, I feel bad for Alex Burmistrov because through no fault of his own, his career was probably irrevocably damaged by the Atlanta Thrashers and the way that they rushed him into the NHL. On the other hand, I don't feel that bad. He's getting paid millions of dollars. So, I mean, but this is a guy who, you know, I have no ill will to him. I hope he goes to Arizona and, you know, can find his game. I'm skeptical at this point in time if he's going to have a lengthy career in the NHL.
Andrew, you can't mince words. Alexander Burmistrov was awful this year with the Winnipeg Jets. 0 goals, 2 assists in 23 games. And I realize that he maybe wasn't getting first power play or second power play time, but the reality is he just wasn't good on the ice. And that includes the way he played defensively. And I realize that he has the ability to kill penalties, you know, and, you know, at times play on the power play. But especially when you have guys like Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers and others to choose from. I mean, there are just players that are simply better than him. You can throw in Nick Patan as well. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned the Atlanta Thrashers when he came into the league in 2010, 2011. And you could argue, and I would agree with you, that he was rushed. But that was 7 years ago. And Alexander Burmistrov went to Russia and played a couple years, and the Jets gave him another chance. And there are just better players on this team right now. And when he was given the opportunity, whether that was on the third line or the fourth line, to have a role on this team, you know, he wasn't able to perform. And, you know, you look at the Arizona Coyotes, they're having a lot of trouble scoring goals. They're second last in the Western Conference as far as points go, but they're also second last in the Western Conference as far as goals go. So, you know, he gets an opportunity. Maybe he has an increased role in Arizona, but certainly he has an opportunity to establish himself as an NHLer again. Because you mentioned, Drew, he was a healthy scratch here for the last month. So he didn't figure into the Jets' plans here going forward. I mean, especially when you consider you have guys like Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic, who just won gold with Team USA at the World Juniors. I mean, there are guys ahead of him, Drew, on the depth chart.
Sure.
So, I mean, Burmistrov, I don't think, is a guy that's ever going to score 30 goals in the NHL, but he certainly gets an opportunity to prolong his NHL career. And, you know, at this point, you kind of just have to wash your hands and say, you know,
wish him good luck.
Yeah, wish him good luck and hope that he's able to turn it around in Arizona.
See, when I look at him, and you mentioned the lack of productivity, it's not even that I look at. It's when you watched him on the ice, he would always stick out, not because of how good he was, but because he was the one guy that just didn't look like he was following the plan, the system. And that's why they plucked him out of the lineup. He just wasn't doing what they're telling him to do. And it's not for a lack of, you know, effort and practice. He works hard. They all say he works hard. But when he'd be on the ice, he'd try to go east-west, or he'd try to do an extra little move or this. And it just wasn't really synergizing with what the coaching staff wanted out of him. And I guess, like you say, just cut the leash and let him go try to get another opportunity elsewhere.
I just don't think he ever found the role that suited him best for the team, which is sort of unfortunate because I always was impressed. But going back to, you know, the first year when the Jets were back here and he was, you know, he played 76 games in that, you know, in that first season when the Jets returned, I always thought that, you know, he had a good defensive presence about him.
Agree. Yeah.
And that he could be a... He was obviously the offense was not going to be there, you know, he was not going to be an offensive talent, you know, deserving of a top 10 pick. Mm-hmm. But I thought he could carve out a niche for himself as sort of a quality defensive minded forward.
Yep.
And then for whatever reason, I don't know if it was the conflict with Claude Noel or he picked up bad habits going back to the KHL or that role wasn't available to him here or he was asked to play a different role, it just sort of fell by the wayside.
Yeah, but Drew, you know what? I agree with you, by the way.
Oh,
but
there you go. But miracle of miracles.
But in the NHL, when there are a finite amount of jobs, you don't have the ability to dictate who you are, right? And when you look at the Jets
unless
right now.
Unless you score.
Sure, and he doesn't score. And I agree with you. I mean, I used to say, I mean, Alexander Burmistrov could be like a Sergei Brelin back in the day with the New Jersey Devils. You know, a third-line guy used to play with John Madden and Jay Pandolfo.
Sure.
A guy that, you know, could play 15, 16 minutes a game, but in a checking defensive role. But I agree with what Joel said earlier. He never showed that he had the hockey IQ, the decision-making that you need to be a smart defensive forward in the NHL. It was the simple plays, getting the puck in deep.
What's the buy-in?
Exactly, and he would take, you know, stupid minor penalties. I mean, I think that, you know, you watch Alexander Burmistrov in practice, and you think, this is one of the best guys on the ice. I mean, he's a fast skater. He's got great hands. He has a decent shot, but he didn't ever seem to be able to put it together, and the stats don't lie. I mean, no goals, 23 games, 2 assists, and I also think he just wasn't very good on the defensive side of the puck. So, again, well, you know, best of luck to Alexander Burmistrov, but I just don't think he's a very good NHLer.
Yeah.
And that was sort of, you mentioned about the defensive side, and that's sort of the biggest shame of it all is that, you know, his struggles caused a regression in the one area that I thought he had a decent amount of skill at. I mean,
but you look
that,
at
he could, that he could,
you
know, carve himself out a niche
but
for.
But you look at the Jets and Joel Armia, Adam Lowry,
absolutely.
Sean Mathias, Blake Wheeler, Brian Little. All of these guys are ahead of him as far as guys that you want to put out there for the PK,
sometimes,
right?
Sometimes you just have to, you know, cut bait.
But you when know. You think you're better than the role you're given, and instead of going out there to prove it, you just kind of go out there and not do a whole lot, which is what he did. Well, then you're getting what you ask for. He could have easily just gone out there and, you know, stuck it to the coaching staff by playing well, dominating, doing something that makes him stick out, that forces the coaches to put him in a different role, because that's clearly what he wanted, but he never really did that.
Well, it's a chicken and egg argument. You know, he would say, oh, I can't force the coaches to put me into this better role because I'm playing with these bad players, quote unquote, guys who, you know, aren't going to allow me to show off my terrific skill set. And then the coaches would say, well, I'm not going to put you with, you know, skilled players because you haven't shown me anything when you've been on the ice. So it's a cycle of just, it never works out. You never get out of this cycle. You're just always just sort of chasing your tail.
And Drew, I think a couple of years ago in 2015, the Jets needed Alexander Burmistrov. Now with the infusion of youth, guys like Andrew Kopp, Nick Petan, Marco Dano, Joel Armia, these guys are now ahead of Burmistrov, like I said, on the depth chart, so they don't need Burmistrov. These guys are simply younger and better than he is.
Well, you know, he had 7 goals last year for the Jets. 7 goals, 14 assists, 21 points in 81 games. I can't for the life of me remember one of those goals. And, I mean, you know.
Was that Ottawa, was that one of his goals? When he came out of the box or whatever, that risky play?
You know which one I remembered? I think he had didn't he take a late penalty in Toronto last season? And
came out of the box. I think that was Ottawa, wasn't it?
I thought it was Toronto.
Okay, yeah, it's possible, yeah.
That's about the only one I can remember, is that took a bad penalty, they bailed him out, and then he came out of the box and managed to get a goal almost immediately thereafter.
Yeah, give and go.
Yeah, but aside from that, it was a pretty innocuous and uneventful time for Alex Burmistrov as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. I guess the most controversial part is when he left the team to go back to KHL when he had a bad relationship, obviously, with Claude Noel, and hopes were so high that Paul Maurice was going to be able to get more out of him, you know, former first, you know, top 10 pick. It's, you know, he's a bust right now as a first round pick, and his time in Winnipeg was definitely that of a bust. Not a bust, the Columbus Blue Jackets. They tried to go for 17 in a row tonight.
The streak is busted, though.
The streak is busted. We'll talk about the Blue Jackets and what had been a most impressive streak. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Capitals look to clear, and they will. And with authority, the win streak for Columbus is over. Good morning. Good afternoon. And good night, Columbus. 16 will not be 17 tonight here in our nation's capital, Washington 5. Columbus nothing.
John Walton with the call on the Capitals radio network. Really happy with himself about the... I mean, I like John.
John's a good John game. John Walton's an excellent play-by-play broadcaster.
Seemed a little bit... You know, you would think that, yeah, sure, the Blue Jackets didn't... They lost tonight 5-0, and the streak, they just ran out of gas. You would think that he'd maybe throw him a little bit of a bone and say, hey, great job, but, you know, too bad you ran into a juggernaut Capitals team or something. But instead, he's like, you guys suck. You didn't do anything. Who can win 17? Anybody can win 16 in a row, but nobody can win 17 in a row.
Drew, you show no mercy when you're breaking the streak.
Apparently, the broadcaster broke the streak. I had no idea that he was that influential. Anyways, as we were saying, the Columbus Blue Jackets, they fall in their efforts to win their 17th in a row to tie the Pittsburgh Penguins. They lose in Washington tonight, mouthful, by a 5-0 margin. You know, how much, you know, would you say right now that the Columbus Blue Jackets are your Stanley Cup favorites?
No. I mean, come on. I mean, guys, they're not a Stanley Cup favorite. I'm not talking about the Vegas odds right now. I'm just talking about the rest of the league. And I mean, it's easy right now to look at the Columbus Blue Jackets number one in the NHL. But before the streak happened, what were they in? Seventh or eighth place?
Well, before the streak happened, before the streak happened, they would have been 11-5-4.
So they were still good. Needless to say, they weren't in first place. Montreal and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but they've been good all season long.
But losses.
I'm just saying.
Six now.
Oh yeah, sorry.
But I mean, it's not like this was a craptacular team that went on a winning streak.
Well,
this
they were
was
one of the worst teams. They were one of the worst teams in the league last year.
Last year, but they've been good for all 37 games they've played this year.
Drew, you asked me the question.
Okay, I did. I don't know why. I'm surprised you're so passionate in saying no and chortling at the possibility.
Well,
you chortled. I mean, you literally chortled.
Let's enough chortling, Drew. I mean, you look at the NHL right now, Joel, and there is arguably the most parity that we've seen in a long time. And year after year, I mean, it seems like, you know, the NHL is you know, just as close as it's ever been. But I think this year, especially with Columbus and Minnesota, I mean, let's be honest here. Columbus is an excellent team, but they're not the best team in the NHL, as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, I think they're going to come back down to reality. I'm not saying that they're going to go on a five-game losing streak here, Drew, but when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins or even the Montreal Canadiens that I just mentioned, I mean, I think top to bottom, they're better. But when you look at the Blue Jackets, though, I mean, let's be honest, guys. They started off the season, what, 0-8 last year, 0-9, whatever it was, and it cost Todd Richards his job. I mean, they couldn't recover from that. But the biggest difference between this year and last year is the play of Sergei Bobrovsky, who admitted that he had just an awful year, and the numbers bear that out as far as how bad he played. For a guy who, you know, won the Vezina Trophy 3 or 4 years ago, I mean, he was awful. It's that and the way they've played defensively. And a guy like Zach Werenski has really helped this team. I mean, this guy's a Calder Trophy finalist right now. So I think the biggest difference is that back end. Seth Jones has been excellent. You got to give credit to David Savard has been good. Jack Johnson has been good. I mean, the entire team has been better top to bottom. But, you know, a 16-game winning streak isn't going to convince me that this is one of the best teams in the NHL. I think right now everybody is drinking John Tortorella's Kool-Aid. Are they going to make the playoffs? Yes, they're going to make the playoffs. But I wouldn't be surprised if this team is knocked out in the first round.
Joel, you same question. I think you might have a bit of a different opinion than
Mr.
Ezra.
Well, it's interesting, right? When you talk about the 0-8 last year, they set a record for futility to start a season. And then now here they are, 16 in a row, almost getting to that record. When you want definition of team, based on that, I would say they probably are the best team in the league right now because they play a full five-man unit, 60-minute game. They have the best goalie in the league right now. Well, statistically speaking, I'm not sure exactly what the stats will tell us, but Bobrovsky, Dubnyk, Price, flip a coin at this point, right? But the one thing they do not have, which is why I might agree with you, is that they don't have, when the game's on the line, come playoff time, who's their game breaker? Who's their Crosby? Who's their Malkin? That kind of guy. But right now, five-man unit, 60 minutes of hockey, not give the opposition an inch. They're playing the best brand right now. They're playing a full team game. So how can they not be the best team in the league as we speak?
And you got to give them credit, right? They've got four guys that have 30 points or more. Cam Atkinson leads the way, but they've got Alex Wenberg, Brandon Saad, and Nick Foligno, all with 30 or more points. Sam Gagner is arguably the best signing in the entire NHL. I think he's making less than $800,000 a year.
Yeah, these guys have bought into a brand of hockey right now that has given them some wins. So even though they don't have that superstar, which at the end of it all could maybe cost them a series, like you just said, right now, they're playing a brand of hockey that's giving them a chance to win every single game. So based on that, they are certainly in the conversation as being one of the best teams. Not to mention, if you just look at the standings, that's where they are.
Okay, but I'm just saying, you know, let's wait, you know, 6 or 8 weeks till March, and let's see where the Columbus Blue Jackets are, and let's see if we're saying the same thing.
So you're saying that the half a season, just under half a season worth of games they've played, is still too small of a sample size?
Well,
or alternatively, the games are easier at the beginning of the season, and it doesn't really matter until you do it towards the end of the regular season and entering the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think it's undeniable, Drew, that the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to make the playoffs this year. In order for them to lose the playoffs, they're going to have to go on a probably 15-game losing streak.
I think I saw a stat yesterday that said even if they've played 500 hockey the rest of the season, and I wasn't 100% sure if they meant 500 points percentage or 500 winning percentage, and I'll spare everybody that conversation.
That's three segments.
I'll spare everybody that conversation that even if they play 500 hockey, they would still finish with 104 points.
So, I mean, this is a good team. I mean, I would say they're a top 10 team in the NHL right now, but I mean, I think this 16-game winning streak has made everybody, you know,
puts
a little bit
facade over the sometimes the truth.
Yeah. And I mean, but hey, Joel, if Sergei Bobrovsky keeps playing like this, I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky right now is a top 5 goaltender in the NHL. He might even be the best goaltender in the NHL right now. No offense to Carey Price or Braden Holtby, but I mean, this is a deep team. And I mean, this team finished bottom five in the NHL last year, but that was, as we talked about, because they started off 0-8. They never recovered, right? A start like that can totally end your season. Mm-hmm. And that's why Todd Richards lost his job. They never recovered. But I mean, this was a team that was picked by many last year to make the playoffs, including myself.
Yeah. You also had Todd Richards as your Jack Adams trophy winner.
Yes, and I was wrong about that. And Tortorella, I mean, is anybody going to argue that he wins the Jack Adams this year?
Now he would be in a driver's seat to do so.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a very good team. And, you know, Joel, you make a good point. I mean, you know, the forwards, I mean, you've got a lot of depth there. I mean, Brandon Saad was a guy who had an underrated season last year, you know, but he's added a lot of offense to this team. Does this team have a Patrick Laine or an Alexander Ovechkin? No, but Alexander Wenberg has done a nice job as their number one center. And, you know, guys like Foligno, Atkinson, Dubinsky, you know, they've given them balanced scoring. So, I mean, this is a... I don't think it's a one-trick pony.
And I don't think... I'm not saying they're going to hoist the cup because they lack that game breaker. I agree. But as a full team, I mean, you're a Devils guy.
Yep.
You know, that 2003 Devils team, they were led by what? Jeff Friesen and Jamie Langbrenner up front?
Don't forget about Mike Rupp.
That was a full team game, was it not?
John Tortorella, he's changed the culture, Joel. I agree with you.
They play
a nice team game, like 5-on-5.
They've bought into something here that's pretty special to watch, where they don't give you an inch. They work their bags off, based on that, everybody's contributing.
Well,
we
just saw them in Winnipeg. I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets simply outworked the Winnipeg Jets when they were here a week ago. And I agree with you. I mean, it is a team game, and John Tortorella has brought a certain culture, and Nick Foligno has been the leader of this team, and, you know, he's led by example. So, absolutely. I mean, they play a very tough style of hockey, and they do have talented players. And, again, they might not have that, you know, that game breaker Pittsburgh has with Crosby and Malkin, or, Chicago has with Taves or Kane. But, I mean, this might be, I would say this much. They're probably the hardest team in the NHL to play against.
Yeah, and if they can stay healthy, they can ride that all year.
But before I start calling them a top team, I still think I'd put Chicago, Pittsburgh, Montreal, St. Louis. I'd probably still put at least five or six teams ahead of them.
Fair enough.
That's all I'm saying.
You're completely entitled to your opinion. If I may quickly, a little bit of a rant. So, as you know, I was in Kentucky, as I am over the holiday season.
Did you eat fried chicken?
I don't think we had any fried chicken this time. But in any event.
Did you have any grits?
Yes, we had grits.
Nice.
Yeah. I was all settled in to watch the Jets and the Blue Jackets game, you know, fire up the game center. And I'm all going to sit down on the couch at the end of the long day and watch the game. And I go and I try and get it to go, and it won't load. It's because I'm in the Blue Jackets viewing region. Okay, no big deal. I'll flip on Fox Sports Ohio and I'll just watch the game on TV. You know, my in-laws are happy to watch the game, no big deal. I go to flip on Fox Sports Ohio and they are showing the Cavaliers game.
Right on.
And because the Blue Jackets, and they're in the midst, they'd won 14 in a row at this point in time, 12 in a row, whatever it was. The Blue Jackets were relegated to the alternate Fox Sports Ohio channel, which my in-laws unfortunately don't get.
Yeah.
And so people who don't have this alternate Fox Sports Ohio channel weren't able to watch the Blue Jackets in the midst of their extensive victory run if they were ever in conflict with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Who are the Cavs playing?
The Cavs were playing nationally on TNT. So I have no clue whatsoever why there was still a regional broadcast of the game.
Yeah.
It'd be like if there was a regional broadcast of a Jets game when they were on national TV at the same time.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I was unhappy because I couldn't access it on Game Center because I was blacked out because of being in the viewing region.
Could you watch it on your laptop in that case?
That's what I was trying to do, watch it on my tablet.
Yeah.
And I can't because the IP address is saying you're trying to watch a Blue Jackets game.
I've never done that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you can't watch a Jets game on your tablet if you're in the Jets viewing region because it's blacked out because it's on TSN3. Anyways, that's my little rant. I did not actually get to see the Jets-Blue Jackets game as a result of that. So
it wasn't a great game. I mean, the Jets obviously lost.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to see the Blue Jackets. Everyone's talking about the Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
I don't often get to see the Columbus
Blue Jackets.
What's
their power play at right now? 25%? 27%?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Just out of control is what it is. Their power play right now is leading the NHL at 27%. I know.
That's unbelievable.
Don't take penalties against Columbus is what I'm going to say there. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the worst injuries we've ever seen. A really interesting article on ESPN.com. We'll bring that to you for one final segment this, what is this, Wednesday, Thursday evening? If you're listening to NHL This Week, we're live on TSN 1290.
Hanson out for Nathan Beaulieu to Weber, firing. That one hit Gallagher in front. Another shot, and Gallagher is hurt. The shot hit him in the hand. Gallagher is hunched over on the Canadiens bench.
For a second straight year, bad news for Brendan Gallagher as he appears to have suffered yet again a serious hand injury. That happened last night in the Canadiens' victory over the Dallas Stars. Here's a lesson, boys and girls. If Shea Weber is shooting with a big slap shot from the point,
duck.
Don't put your hand in the way of the puck. It's going to do some damage. So Brendan Gallagher likely out. And we're going to talk about some of the this really interesting ESPN article where they go around and they talk to different players in the league about the most serious, worst injuries you've ever seen a teammate suffer. But before that, Ezzy, you were just mentioning something that is very troubling to me, very disturbing. Remus went to Remo, as Hustler likes to call him. Remus, as we like to call him.
I was the first person that started calling him Remo.
Really? You think you were the first person ever to start calling him Remo?
I was the first person when he was on a legal curve that called him Remo.
Fine. You can have that honor. Remus went to Keener Jerseys. Now, that's a very great idea. Everybody should go to Keener Jerseys, 982 Portage Avenue, official jersey sponsor of Illegal Curve Hockey. They do great work. And he went and got a customized Alec Martinez jersey.
Yep.
Because Alec Martinez, defenseman on the Los Angeles Kings, is his favorite player in the NHL?
Yep.
Does anybody else not find that to be tremendously random? Because as far as I know, there is no relation between Alec Martinez and Michael Remus?
Well, I mean, I've known this for a long time. I didn't think you were going to bring it up on air, Drew, but...
Really? You didn't think I was going to bring it up on air?
Before or after his OT winner for the Cup?
Well, that's the thing. When he scored that Cup-winning goal in 2014, I think that's when Remus really started to like him, but I think Remus even liked him before that, when the Kings won their first Cup in 2012. But he texted me this afternoon, and he got a notification from Keener Jerseys that his jersey was ready. And he was very excited about his Alec Martinez jersey being ready. And he asked me if I wanted to go play outdoor hockey this week. But, you know, you wear your jersey when you go play outdoor hockey, customized jerseys.
Are you going to play outdoor hockey?
Not when it's this cold out.
With your Mike Rupp jersey?
You know, there was a bit of a tradition, Ezzy. We're on Saturday morning at 6 a.m., which is somehow only 30 hours and 8 minutes from now, so God help us. But there was a bit of a tradition. This is, I think, the third consecutive year where we played outdoor, where we have a 6 a.m. start.
Yeah.
And that after that show would be done at 9 a.m., because it's still bright and early, we'd go play outdoor hockey at that point in time. We did that for the last couple years. There's been no talk about us doing that this coming Saturday.
Well, we're going to do it this year, but I actually can't this Saturday.
Ah, and you have plans.
This is going to make engagement. You have some fodder.
Bed Bath & Beyond?
No, but I do have a meeting with certain wedding venue.
Wedding venue. Wedding plans.
Yes.
Okay.
So I have to go there.
I'm really excited. I mean, I'm excited for you and Naomi about your engagement because, you know, we're friends and everything else.
Yep.
I'm just excited about the ballpark 7 months worth of content that's going to give me on the show.
Yep.
I mean, you know, when Laura and I were getting married, you guys were able to get some content out of it. And now, really, anytime I have a, you know, what are we going to talk about this segment? Or, you know, boy, you know, I wish that guest had picked up. He hadn't picked up the phone. I now have a built-in buffer where we can just go to the latest updates from Ezzy's wedding planning as a content filler.
Yep. We're going to have a nacho bar at the wedding.
Really?
Yep.
Is that confirmed?
Yep.
Excellent. I'm on board. Are there any other bars that I can be I should be aware of?
Well, I want to have mini Illegal Curve sandwiches at every table as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, we just got engaged less than 2 weeks ago, right? So I mean, we haven't had that much time. I was in Mexico for
a week. How excited are you for the taste test portion of the wedding planning?
Oh God, especially the cakes.
You enjoy your cake.
Yeah.
Are you going to, like, you know, spend the next 7 months sort of like getting into wedding shape?
We're not talking about injuries, are we?
Clearly, at this point in time, not. Are you going to spend the next 7 months like getting, you know, the people, you know, I'm getting married, got to get into shape now.
Oh, I'm actually going to get fatter.
You're going to get fatter.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's tremendously
good idea. I'm going to do the reverse wedding prep. Some people like to, you know, maybe do some TRX or maybe some CrossFit. And
you're actually going to eat a T-Rex is what you're going to
do.
I'm
going to eat a dinosaur, Drew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I am who I am. Do I need to lose weight and then just put it back on?
Naomi loves you, so yeah, I mean, obviously she loves you well aware of all of your flaws and everything else. So, yeah. I mean, at this point in time, no, I would suggest not changing whatsoever.
I think it's more important that I just don't screw anything up in the next, you know, 7 or 8 months, as opposed to, you know, losing weight. Like, I'm not entering any fitness competitions.
Can I suggest you maybe leave town for 7 months? That might be the best way for you not to screw anything up.
Yeah.
Just, you know, go somewhere else for 7 months. You're on a sort of maybe a yoga retreat, or you're going to become a monk for the next 7 months. Maybe take an oath of solitude of some sort, something like that.
Yeah, I might have to do that. You know, I wanted to say one thing, Drew. I mean, you got married, 4 or 5 years ago, but
It'll be 5 years in April. God, that time has still flown gone by. Yeah.
I
know the worst part is Laura doesn't even let me date other girls now.
I've heard you use that one before.
It's a good line, isn't it?
That's all right.
It's a pretty good line.
The one thing I was going to say, you would understand this, but I didn't realize how important centerpieces were.
There's all sorts of things, as you're about to find out, that you didn't think were important that are now going to take up a load amount of time in your life
such as hygiene.
Well, hygiene's a separate issue altogether. But you're going to be asked to make decisions that you had no clue about things.
Yep.
Just, you know, try and be as perceptive as possible.
Yeah, and pretend like you care.
One, pretend like you care. And two, just say, you know, listen to what Naomi's saying. She's clearly trying to lead you down a certain path. Just say, yes, that's the best idea I've ever heard. Because truthfully, your opinion doesn't matter.
Right.
And you're going to do whatever she wants. But I'm saving you the fight when you try and put up a fight and say, no, I want something else. Skip that entirely and just go with, yes, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's sage advice, Drew.
Thank you. I'm I have wisdom within these eyes of mine here.
We better talk some hockey here.
How about a quick score update from around the NHL? What do we got? How much time do we have, Chris? You got 2 minutes? Okay. Red Wings, they're up 4-0 in Los Angeles with 5 minutes to go. Obviously, that's a late game there on the West Coast. The Wild, and one must be a wild game, up 5-4 on the San Jose Sharks with 3 minutes to go in the Shark Tank there. So a wild game there between the Minnesota Wild, playing very well in the San Jose Sharks, last year's Western Conference representative.
They're really taking a bite out of San Jose there.
Very good. Attaboy. Edmonton Oilers go into Boston. They beat the Bruins by a 4-3 margin. Bruins continue the scuffle. The Oilers continue their decent play. Capitals 5, Blue Jackets 0. We mentioned that earlier. That's the end of the Columbus Blue Jackets and their 16-game winning streak. Joel, you mentioned this earlier. The Nashville Predators go into Tampa. A 6-1 Predators victory over the Tampa Bay Lightning. Keep waiting for the Lightning to turn it around, but they're quickly running out of time. In St. Louis, this would be an upset. The Carolina Hurricanes go into the Show Me State, and they show the St. Louis Blues, who's boss, with a 4-2 victory over the Blues. The Hurricanes improving to 17-14-7 on the season. And last but not least, the Chicago Blackhawks, they defeat the Buffalo Sabres, as we'd all expect, by a 4-3 margin, that game going into overtime. That's it for this Thursday edition of NHL This Week. Big thanks to Josh Cooper for joining us. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris, doing a great job behind the board. For Joel Marcoux, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at the ungodly hour of 6 in the morning, we wish you good night and good luck.